Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Dr. Caroline Leaf, and welcome to my podcast, Cleaning Up the Mental Mess, a podcast dedicated to helping you take back control of your mental and physical health. I am very excited about today's guest because not only do I love his books, but he's just so full of excitement about life that it's hard not to be happy after speaking with him and listening to him. Joining me today is Neil Pasricha. Neil is the author of 6 best-selling books, including The Book of Awesome, an in-demand speaker and a top podcaster. His work focuses on themes of gratitude, happiness, failure, resilience, and trust. His first TED Talk, The 3 A's of Awesome, is ranked one of the 10 most inspiring of all time and one of my favorite TED Talks. In this episode, Neil and I discuss how to help our children become stress resilient and how to become more stress resilient ourselves. Neil also shares some great tips on how to bounce back after failure, how to find direction in your life, how you can want nothing, do nothing, and have everything, and so much more. If you like my podcast and enjoy today's episode, please consider leaving a 5-star review wherever you listen. And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Neil, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm a great fan of yours. I love what you do. In fact, this morning I was actually just listening to you, your latest interview with Jordan. I've actually interviewed Jordan and I loved your interview with him. I actually wrote down a couple of things you said that I'm going to ask you to talk about. So you're great. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me, Dr. Leaf.
It's going to be fun. Okay, so before we start, can you just share a little bit more about yourself that's not in your bio? You know, what got you where you are today, why you do what you do, what keeps you motivated, all that good stuff.
Sure. My name is Neil Pasricha. I'm 40 years old. I live in Toronto, Canada. About 10 years ago, my wife left me and my best friend took his own life. And so I started a blog to try to cheer myself up. It was called 1000awesomethings.com. And every single day, I came home from work for 1,000 straight weekdays, and I wrote down a simple pleasure, like wearing warm underwear from out of the dryer, getting called up to the dinner buffet first at a wedding, or flipping to the cold side of the pillow in the middle of the night. Over the 4 years or 1,000 days that I wrote that blog, it blew up. It became totally viral. It ended up hitting 100 million people, and it won the award for best blog in the world from the International Academy of Digital Arts and Sciences 2 years in a row.
Amazing. I remember hearing you on one of your interviews telling about that. It's a fantastic story.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, I'll just close up real quick is that then that turned into a book called The Book of Awesome and a bunch of sequels and calendars and journals. And flash forward to me in my life, 5 years later, I met somebody new. We fell in love. We got married. And when her name is Leslie, when she's my wife today, when she told me that she was pregnant on the flight home from our honeymoon, I then spent 9 months writing a love letter to my unborn child. That turned into a book called The Happiness Equation. And now here we are sitting in 2020. I now have 3 children. They're all boys. They're 5, 3, and 1. And I'm now thinking a lot about anxiety and stress and mental toughness. And that prompted me to write my new book, which is called You Are Awesome, How to Navigate Change, Wrestle with Failure, and Live an Intentional Life. So that's the story of my 7 books, all under the umbrella of how to live an intentional life.
Oh, I love that. So it's really come out of your experience, which is fantastic, which, you know, it makes it authentic and meaningful. That's such a great motivation. Well, your most recent book is You Are Awesome, How to Navigate Change, Wrestle with Failure, and Live an Intentional Life. So you just indicated that having 3 kids is what inspired you. Can you talk a little bit more about that inspiration and why were you inspired to write this for your kids?
Yeah, for my kids and for myself, as I think all my books are, you know, the 1000awesomethings.com blog originally was for me to cheer myself up.
Yeah.
The Happiness Equation was originally a letter to my unborn child. And now it's like, I'm 40 years old. I'm quote unquote successful, meaning that my books have done well. I should sort of be confident now. Like for the first time in my life, I should be confident. I'm not. Like, why is it that when somebody sends me an email that I perceive to be rude, it like devastates me for days. Like, why am I upset by that? Why, when I get 2 likes on a photo, do I think I've got no friends? You know? And so I'm like, this is so weird. I'm sort of feeling anxious about life and I don't know why. And I'm starting to see a little sort of bits of it in my kids. I look at the research, it turns out that all of us are feeling this way. Mm-hmm. Dr. Jean Twenge at San Diego University says that anxiety rates have spiked 30% in the past 5 years. So I think now that it's two things. Number one, we grew up relatively easy relative to previous generations. We have no major wars, no major famines, no one's going through a big depression. So as a result, we get gold stars and ribbons. We feel pretty good. We got running water. We feel safe. We can marry who we want. We have not had to deal with as much failure, so we no longer have the skills to handle it. In addition, our cell phones feed us everybody else's greatest hit. So we've got the compounding effect of cell phones making us feel inferior, together with the fact that we haven't developed the internal musculature to navigate failures. And that's why I think anxiety is spiking. And that's why I wrote this book. It's to increase mental resilience, really. It's really a book about resilience for me and for my kids and anyone that wants to read it.
This episode is brought to you by Ned. Ned's collection of full-spectrum hemp oil products contains CBD extracted from the finest organic hemp plants and is one of my favorite go-to products to improve my sleep, reduce pain, and boost my mood. I love Ned's commitment to sustainability and purity. And ladies, they have some great products to help ease period pains and help balance hormones. My daughters love their Natural Cycles collection. Ned products are also non-GMO, a great source of antioxidants, and can help reduce inflammation and will not get you high. You can get 15% off today with free shipping by going to www.helloned.com/Dr. Leaf. That's www.helloned.com/Dr. Leaf and use the code Dr. Leaf. The link and offer details will be in the show notes. Oh, I love that. You know, I'm a cognitive neuroscientist and I've been doing mind brain research for the last 30 years and I do clinical trials. And the one I've just finished is on a non-pharmacological. So not, I don't believe in drugs. I believe in trying to help people understand their mind and so on. When I talk about drugs, I'm talking about psychotropics and so on. And it was for anxiety and depression, helping people, you know, to understand resilience and so on. And it's just, so this is such a good topic and so relevant. That's why I'm so excited about your book. So, you know, good job that you're doing that, because it's something that needs attention desperately in this day and age, because it's been so handled so incorrectly. So this is amazing. So basically, this book is about building stress resilience. Can you talk more about some of the strategies and tools and lessons in the book that can help someone become more thick-skinned and failure-proof, as you'd say? I love your little anecdotes.
Yeah, sure. Well, the first thing is, right now, if I stand up in front of an audience and I ask a room full of people, how many of you sleep within 10 feet of your cell phone, almost every hand goes up. And then when I ask that same group of people, hey, what do you do right before bed? Is it checking your cell phone? People, you know, keep their hands up. What do you do first thing in the morning? Check your cell phone. You know, in that report I quoted from Dr. Jean Twenge, she says that the rise of anxiety is due to the ascendance of the cell phone. So the number one thing I recommend to build mental toughness is get your cell phone out of your bedroom. You got to plug it into your basement or somewhere far away. Buy an alarm clock if you must. Okay. Mm-hmm. But most importantly, begin your day with a 2-minute mental strengthening practice that I call 2-minute mornings. I do this every morning, or I try to. I get a pen and a cue card. You could do it in a journal, and you simply write down 3 prompts. They are, I will let go of, I am grateful for, and I will focus on. So the principles underpinning each of those are, I will let go of helps you crystallize and eject a tiny anxiety. Most of us are missing the quote-unquote Catholic confession chamber these days. A lot of religious practices have a form of confession, but the number one growing religion is no religion. So we just don't have a place to put the things that are worrying us anymore.
Very good.
Right? Then I will feel grateful for, or I am grateful for, write down a few meaningful, small, specific things that you're thankful for. When my husband Antonio put the toilet seat down, when my 3-year-old gave me a painting from school, when my dog learned how to shake a paw. They got to be specific. This is based on research from Emmons and McCullough that shows if you can write down 10 of these a week, you're not just happier, but physically healthier after a 10-week period. And then the last one, I will focus on. It turns out, based on my research and the research of others, a lot of what's dragging us down these days is something called decision fatigue, which means that we're just overwhelmed by choice. And social media, of course, helps propagate this. And just we all have too much to do. It's too much choice. You go on Netflix, you're overwhelmed. You go on YouTube, you're overwhelmed. You know, you go to anywhere, you go online, you're overwhelmed. And so I will focus on helps carve a will do from your endless could do and should do. And even just taking 30 seconds to a minute to think, what is the one thing I'm going to do today that helps you for the rest of the day? Be like, oh, that's my one big focus. I just have to, if I get that one thing done, you know, today was a success. So just to summarize for your listeners, it is a simple 2-minute morning practice that says, I will let go of, I am grateful for, and I will focus on as a way to build mental strength for the day.
Oh, I love it. So that's really a big part of the book is focusing around those techniques.
Yeah, the book is comprised of 9, I call them secrets, but they're really just chapters. Mm-hmm. And what I just gave you is secret number 6, which is called Reveal the Heal, but starting your day in the right foot.
And then
there's many little ones in the book. We could spend a whole hour talking about them if you'd like, or we could jump around however you want to.
Well, tell us one more, because I think that's lovely. People love practical stuff. I know my audience loves practical stuff. So tell us one more if that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely. I have this chapter in the book that's called Telling Yourself a Different Story. It turns out that most of us, when something bad happens to us, we have a natural human tendency to think it's going to be this way forever. Okay. Mm-hmm. There's research done by Daniel Gilbert. He's a famous Harvard psychologist. He wrote the book Stumbling on Happiness. The research is amazing. It's called The End of History Illusion. Mm-hmm. They asked 19,000 people, hey, how's the last 10 years of your life? And everyone paints a tempestuous portrait of ups and downs, left turns and right turns. I was with Jerry, and now I'm with Tom, and I quit this job, and I got fired from here, blah, blah, blah. But then when the same 19,000 people were asked, what are the next 10 years of your life going to look like? They all said, oh, well, I'll still be married to Tom, and I'll still be at the vice president of this company. I'll still be living in San Diego. We presume the future will be exactly as it is. The problem is, if you just got a divorce, if you just got fired, if you just went through a breakup, then you still think, I will never meet anyone. I'll be living in the basement forever. I'll never find another job. We are so good at thinking things won't change, but as a result, we don't have the tools to picture the future. We confuse the possibility with the probability. Okay. We think that just because I can't picture it, it won't happen. So what are 3 questions I use in my book to help jostle your mind after a bad day or a bad experience? They are, number 1, will this matter on my deathbed? Okay. Number 2 is, can I do something about this? And number 3 is this a story I am telling myself? Ask yourself those 3 questions. You got C- on your science test. Well, will it matter on your deathbed? No, you probably won't even remember you took science in grade 11. Okay. You got fired. Can I do something about this? If you can, go ahead and do it. If you can't, that relieves you of the obligation of trying. Okay? So it's just kind of like the serenity prayer put into a question. Mm-hmm. And then the 3rd one is this a story I'm telling myself? Look, I give a lot of speeches at colleges and universities. You know what people tell me? I failed my parents. I say, why? They say, I can't get into med school. I say, why? They say, oh, because I failed biology. I was like, you failed biology. I feel my parents is the story you're telling yourself. Or people say, oh, nobody trusts me. I say, why? They say, because I drink too much. I'm an alcoholic. I say, okay, I drink too much is a fact. Nobody trusts me is a story.
That's so good.
Too often what we are all doing is we are lacquering onto our minds all these invisible stories that we are telling other people. You don't like the gap between your teeth? You think I'll never get married. There's 2 separate things there. One is a fact. The other is a story. Okay.
I love that. I love that. The fact and the story. And to distinguish between the fact and the story.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's so good. So Karen, with a gap in the tooth and the marriage, that's great. Good example.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I use in the book a personal example. I discovered in 9th grade gym class that I had 1 testicle and everybody else had 2. I was like that since birth. You know, I had a small operation when I was 6 weeks old that I was never aware of. Mm-hmm. And then my 9th grade phys ed teacher, my gym teacher said, I crushed a guy's testicle in a wrestling tournament. You know, after that, we all referred to him as half a man. And everyone burst out laughing and it hit me. I was like, oh my God, like everyone else has 2. Guess what, Dr. Lee? For the next like 10 years of my life, I carried around a huge sense of shame. I looked up getting like surgical implants, which is a whole sub-industry that actually exists.
Gosh.
Yeah, it's a big industry. People get silicone implants and stuff. I switched to wearing boxer briefs because I was too embarrassed to get changed in the change room. I wasn't comfortable to date people because I was like, they might see me naked, and then it would all be called off because I'm horribly disfigured.
That's so sad.
Exactly. But my situation is not unusual. Everyone's carrying around stuff like that, whether it's about a gap tooth or a bald spot or their height or their weight or their, you know what I mean? We all have so much baggage, and part of my book is trying to help people shed that. And by the way, the way I do this, of course, is sharing my own stuff. So writing the book, I made me confront a lot of these demons head on.
I love it. I love what you're saying. I love the fact that you're authentic with your story because it makes you relatable. I was a practicing clinician for 25 years. And even now, the work that I do teaching people about mind management, it's all about, find your story, find the reason why. And you're so right. Everyone's carrying around something that has influenced the rest of their life. I mean, I've had drug addicts that were literally at the end of their tether, and it was from, literally, if you track back, it was from a comment that was made, like in your situation. Okay, you didn't become a drug addict, but this is another situation of another person who ended up, she was just very boyish looking, and she wanted to be like her brothers, and her someone once said to her, oh, you look like, what a cute little boy you've got, and that just threw her for the rest. She just spiraled downhill, lost her whole value in herself, and went from pornography to drugs to you name it. Her life was a wreck, and it took, honestly, almost 35 years before she sort of pulled herself through it. And it was from that one statement. So, I'm so glad you brought that up, because it is so true how we've got to separate the story from the fact. I love how you put that. Really good.
Thank you. And thank you for sharing that story, because I think it shows the problems that could happen without us even realizing, what's going on in someone's mind.
Exactly.
Right?
And you highlight those sort of things in such a great, comfortable way that helps people to feel safe. Because in this day and age, not everyone feels safe because of the whole mental health movement, which is something that I fight against, the traditional disease kind of focus. You are helping people to say, hey, you've got a story. It's okay. And let's separate the facts from the story. I love it. I think you're doing a really good service to society with your book.
Thank you.
Good job. Okay. So I want to just jump on a comment you made in Jordan's comment, is because it kind of relates to what we're doing, because getting through what you got through was difficult. It wasn't something that was easy and overnight. You make a comment in Jordan's interview this morning that I listened to, that the only way to look better is to get bad. I love that. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure, as long as I remember what I said. So I said I said the only way to get better is to get bad.
Yes, the only way to look better is to get bad. And you linked it into not testing our losses and failure enough. Having to lose more to win more. You're on that theme. You were on a roll. I have to tell you, you were on a roll, and it was very good.
Okay, good. Well, this is the way I operate. I'm sure you're the same way and other people are. I get my engine going and then I just get excited. And with that interview, which is, you're talking about the Jordan Harbinger podcast.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I was in San Francisco. So I was in his house and we were just hanging out there. And so that's partly why you probably sense that. But here's the thing. Mm-hmm. I was maybe 10 years old when my dad bought me a book. And the book was called The Complete Book of Major League Baseball Statistics. And this was before the internet, so you couldn't just Google it.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember poring over that book, when I go to bed every night, because I loved baseball. So I was like, who's got Hank Aaron's got the most home runs and Babe Ruth the second. I just loved that idea of stats. But then I noticed something one day, which is the guy that had the most wins in baseball, who's a pitcher named Cy Young. For those that are baseball fans listening, they'll know because they have the Cy Young Award every year for the best pitcher. He was also the guy with the most losses. I was like, that's puzzling. He's got the most wins and the most losses. Interesting. But then I looked at strikeouts. Strikeouts are the best thing you can do when you're a pitcher. You strike the guy out. Well, the guy who was number one was a guy named Nolan Ryan. And guess who had the most walks? Nolan Ryan. I was like, that's interesting. The person who had the most wins, also had the most losses. The person who had the most strikeouts also had the most walks. I looked around and I noticed this trend continued everywhere I looked. If you ever see someone's fancy wedding photos, have you ever asked a wedding photographer, how do you take so many good pictures? They always say the same thing. The reason I have 50 good photos of this wedding and everybody else has 50 kind of crappy ones is because I took 2,000 pictures. I took 2,000 photos over 2 hours. So, of course, I've got, 0.5% of them are good or whatever that is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought about myself. It appears, and even the story I said at the beginning of this interview, I started a blog on a whim called 1000awesomethings.com. It turned into a big viral hit called the Book of Awesome. Mm-hmm. But what I haven't told you, and I didn't used to tell people, and I always hid, was the fact that I started that blog when I was 28. I had been starting blogs with my friends since I was 15. And in the book, You Are Awesome, I catalog all the other ones I started, which, by the way, had a grand total of like 10 hits total on 10 websites. Like
I love that. From 10 to 100 million.
Exactly. And the point is, it's lose more to win more. I'd figured out some stuff that I didn't even know what I'd figured out. And I look at, there's research on relationships that I also uncover in the book. It's under this idea of losing more to win more. And there's this research that came out of the London newspaper, The Telegraph, over in the UK. And they interviewed people who were in stable and secure, loving, long-term relationships. Okay. And they said, can you sit down on a piece of paper and recount for us every other relationship you've ever been in that led you to this one? Every other one-night stand, every disaster date, every person you dated more than a year, every person you dated less than a year, every blind date. And they had people do this exercise. And they come up, and I put in the book, the average composite index of what the rocky royal road to romance really is. So for the average woman and man, in a stable long-term relationship, like, I mean, potentially married, potentially having kids, etc., it was like something like, you know, 16 relationships, you know, 50, you know, 12 one-night stands, like 10 disaster dates, like 7 long-term relationships, you know, 4 relationships of those over a year, 3 of them less than a year, like this crazy portrait. And that was the average. And that's kind of an average composite of what led them to their stable, long-term, loving relationship. And had I known that after every girlfriend that dumped me or every, you know, person I dated twice and I thought they were the one, you know, then it would have given me some tiny sense of comfort. The idea that every quote unquote loss, and you couldn't chalk up an old relationship as a loss, but every sort of like one that didn't work is in service of a future that will eventually.
If you love listening to my podcasts and want to take your mental health healing journey to the next level, then I want to invite you to my 2020 Mental Health Solutions Summit, December 3rd through 5th in Dallas, Texas. The core focus of this conference is to give you simple, practical, applicable, scalable, and scientific solutions to help you take back control of your mental health and to help others and to make impactful changes in your community. You will learn how to manage the day-to-day stressors of life, as well as those acute stressors that blindside us. Our goal is to address your most pressing mental health concerns, help you find answers, and equip you with the knowledge and the resources that you need to make the change from living a life of barely surviving to one where you are thriving. There will be sessions on addiction recovery, sex and mental health, how to help your child become stress resilient and manage anxiety, how to detox your brain, nutrition tips to boost mental and physical health, and so much more. Early bird tickets are on sale now, so hurry and get yours today before prices increase on March 31st. We also have limited VIP tickets that include special private Q&A sessions with me and meet and greets with myself, and there are discounts available for groups. For more information and to register today, visit drleafconference.com. The link will also be in the show notes. That's so good. That's so encouraging and so helpful and so realistic. I mean, as you're saying it, I know I'm nodding my head. I know that the listeners are. It's just realistic because we know that you've got to fight to get through. But in this, I think it's changed so much. You know, you talk about how this day and age has changed and how people grab in their cell phones and, you know, everyone's talking about this and it's a quick fix mentality. So we've kind of forgotten the good old hard work, the good old adage that hard work and keep going and keep picking yourself up is important to remember. You know, it reminds you of, you know, Thomas Edison. 1,000 times he tried before he got the light bulb right. And I remember when he was interviewed, someone said, how do you feel about your 1,000 failures? And he said, they're not failures. It's 1,000 things that I know don't work. You know, and it kind of reminds you what you're saying, that you have to turn those into something that's building, it's like steps building towards the goal that the next stage or so on. So that's really great. I love that.
One of my little cousins emailed me like the other day, and he was like, Neil, I want to be a YouTuber. How do I come up with a big YouTube channel? And I wrote back to him. I said, Ben, you aren't going to like this, but the answer is to make 1,000 videos. If you make 1,000 videos, I guarantee you by that time, your 1,000th, you will have a big, popular, successful YouTube channel.
So now everyone's breathing this huge sigh of relief that, okay, I can just keep going.
Well, exactly. And he might not do it, and he might not want to do it, and he might not be willing to, and that's fine. But if he does do it, if he keeps trying, if he makes 1,000 videos, it might take him 5 years, then I guarantee by the time he's 1,000, you know, he will have figured it out. Because
exactly.
He will have figured out on video number 50, he'll have figured out lighting. By video number 100, he'll figure out the right length. By video number 150, he'll figure out his style. By video number 200, he'll have had a few things that worked. You know, everything got one hit. Then he'll have had a few that had 500 or 1,000. He'll be, interesting. Then by, you know, video 250, he'll have developed some friends in the YouTube community to share ideas with. By video 300, those community members will have given him ideas and vice versa, and they'll have understood the YouTube algorithm a little bit more, and now he'll have good quality videos with his style and tone and the right lighting. So, of course, by 400, 500, he's now getting like 500 to 1,000 hits per channel, and he starts to see that his subscriber counts up. Then to the 1,000 mark, it's all – now he's running. And anyone who's – we have this myth in our society of the overnight success. It's not true. There's no such thing. Anyone who's got a popular channel on YouTube, if you were to actually click into their all their uploads and scroll all the way to the back, I guarantee you those first ones were crap. They're garbage and no one watched them. But they serve to create the good one today.
Exactly. You're totally right. I mean, I've spent years in my field. I've been 30 years in my field, and I talk all over the place, and people will come up to me and say, oh, I want to do what you're doing. What did you study? Or what did you do? Or what coaching course, sort of how many degrees later and how many years of clinical research and whatever. It's not an overnight thing, but people will see like yourself or myself or someone who's doing something and think, you know, how do I get that instantly? What's the instant trick? And that's really, that's a big mistake. And then people don't keep trying because it's not so easy. And like you say something in related to this, that you ask a question, do you love it so much that you are prepared to go through the pain to get it?
Yeah, exactly. Because one thing I don't like about society today is this, we've got this like commencement speech culture where we want to hear these inspirational speeches. Somebody's on stage and they got a nice hat on and they say, do what you love and follow your passion and chase your dreams. Well, I hate that. Because
me too. I'll join the club. Thank you for saying it. I hate it so much too.
I hate that because, I mean, it sounds good and I would definitely cheer for it if I was in the audience. But if I really look step back, I'm like, no, the question isn't to do what you love. It's to do you love it so much you can take the pain and the punishment too? And that's related to this idea of lose more to win more. For example, the number one self-help author in the past 2 or 3 years is a guy named Mark Manson. Mm-hmm. He sold over 9 million copies of this book called The Subtle Art of Not Giving an F, if you know that book.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because who doesn't? Because it sold more copies than anyone. Truth of the matter is Mark Manson grew up in Austin, Texas, wanting to be a rock star. He actually grew up literally wanting to be a rock star. Like he wanted to be in a band. That was his goal. But then he's starting to lug amps around to clubs at Tuesday night at 2 a.m. And he's like, I hate this. And then it's like, you got to master this chord progression so that you can play it, memorize and sing. And he's like, well, I hate this practice. So he like hated the pain and the punishment that went towards becoming a musician. But when it came to becoming a popular self-help author, guess what he loved doing? He loved going into Facebook and getting into comment wars with people and like coming up with arguments and starting a blog. And that was pain and punishment too. Nobody read his stuff, but he loved the quote unquote pain of it. So, and by the way, I worked for 10 years at Walmart and people always said to me in the hallway, people loved it and I did, but some people said, oh, I hate this job and I want to quit. And I'd say, oh, so why don't you? And they wouldn't say it, but the point is, they could not take the pain and the punishment that goes along with looking for a new job.
So good.
Getting 100 resumes, getting 50, no, don't hear back from 50 of them. From the 50 you do hear back, 40 say no. From the 10 that say, we'll talk to you, 9 of those say no. From the one, you know what I mean? Like that would take 6 months of pain and punishment.
Exactly.
But if you're willing to do that, you'll find a new job. But if you aren't willing to do that, you're here. So then shut up.
Exactly. Exactly. Anyone who's run their own business and or done something will understand that too. I mean, how many failures before you actually get to where you're trying to get to? And then also the measures of success, how people measure success in such an extrinsic kind of reductionistic way instead of looking at the broader picture. You know, it's I love it. You've highlighted something that is an absolute key to like a sense of peace, I think, in people. You know, it brings, it's hard work, but it's a peace in the midst of that. You know, I don't know if that explains what you're trying to achieve, but that's how I would see it too.
Yeah. You're a lot smarter than me, so if you say so, I believe you.
I don't think that's the case. But you know, I just think if I look at what the people that I work with in my world, which is pretty much everyone, we've got our minds and anxiety and depression. A lot of that anxiety is coming from people not wanting to get into those painful places and not wanting to go through it. That's why I really like that phrase of yours, because it's until you dive down into the dirt, you are not going to, and recognize the time factor, you're not going to move forward. Okay, so I want to jump into back to stress resilience, your new book, and I want to talk about just in terms of, so this book is basically about building stress resilience that you've said, and I love that. Let's talk about parents now. How can we parents teach children? Because you're a dad, you've got three kids. I've got four kids. Mine are grown up. Yours are little. But how can we teach them to become more mentally tough and resilient?
Number one is no kids need cell phones. They just don't. I think it's a red herring, and we're loading our kids up with technologies and screens way too young. There is a private school in Toronto. And by the way, this screen addiction affects us all, many parents, including myself. Mm-hmm. You know, we suffer from it. Mm-hmm. But first of all, kids don't need to be on them. They just don't. And And I've done a lot of work with schools and administrators and parents, and there's a problem. The problem is parents say, oh, I need to know where my kid is at all times. Well, that's not true. You don't need to know where your kid is at all times. You think you do because every other parent is tethered to their kid. But then as a result, you never let them explore or walk home by themselves from school, or like you're not letting them.
So good.
That's the problem. And the administrators say, well, we'd like to ban cell phones, but parents say that they need them to know where their kid is. So this is a problem. So there's a school in Toronto, it's a private school, so it does cost money, but I've been talking to the administrators there. It's called Branksome Hall, and the administrators there have been piloting for the last 2 years a no cell phones policy, which is pretty brazen these days, you know, so it's a school, and they have like some allowance, you know, I can't remember the details of the system, but like, you know, there's some like maybe some moment at lunch where it's allowed or whatever. But the benefits are, obviously, cyberbullying and all that stuff is shot way down, which is a huge issue. What's gone up is intimacy, togetherness, community. People are talking in the hallways again. Like clubs and team signups are higher. So it's a huge benefit is take away screens. My kids say to me, when am I going to get an iPad? I say, you can buy one for yourself when you're 18.
I love that.
Okay. Now, that's one. The other thing you can do is like let them fail. Like, I just interviewed Dr. Laura Markham for my podcast. Mm-hmm. So I have a podcast. Mm-hmm. It's called Three Books. Mm-hmm. I interview people and I ask them which three books most shape their lives.
I love it. It's a great podcast. We'll put the link to this and your book in the show notes.
Cool. Thank you very much. And so I talked to Laura Markham and I interviewed her about which three books shaped her life. And I don't know if you know Dr. Laura Markham. She's a parenting expert, right? She wrote the book, Peace the Parent, to Happy Kids. And what she says, or what I'm saying based on my conversation with her, is aren't letting our kids, we're not letting them fail. Mm. We're moving obstacles from, you know, some people, there's this new term, snowplow parenting. Mm-hmm. And what we should be doing, and then the college admission scandal is actually, that's the worst part of that scandal, is that it's not that people did it. It's that they didn't believe in their kids.
It's terrible. Mm-hmm.
That's what you think. You think my kid's so stupid that I have to cheat in order to get them in.
So
like
bad.
It's like the kids left with this feeling like my parents didn't think that I could do it.
Yeah, they undervalued their kids. That's the message they sent to them.
Exactly. Or then I must clear the path for you in order for you to be successful. Mm-hmm. It's okay if your kids fail. Let them get nixed from the basketball team. Don't complain to the coach. Like let them suffer from some stuff. It's okay. If they forget their book at home, that's a thing they're going to have to wrestle with. Every skin thickener that they go through in their life helps them become a more resilient adult. And it's hard. It's hard when my kid decides to wear no jacket in the winter to school. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, okay, like then you will have to be the one exactly. that learns that it'll be like, or whatever. Like, but I can't be, if I provide you with a warm coat every day before you go to school forever, for your whole life. And it may, don't get me wrong, a 2-year-old is an exception, but like depend after a certain age, then you'll never know how to dress yourself.
Exactly.
Like You know what I mean? Like, so, and that's just one weird example, but if there's everything else is like that. What you're doing is removing the chance for your kid to learn in a safe environment. It's okay for them to fail at home. It's okay for them to fail at school. Those are grounds for failure. They're created to encourage failure. If you remove the ability for them to have a crappy science project, then they'll never have a good one on their own.
Exactly. It's brilliant. You know, some of the things when I was still practicing, I used to tell like literally a prescription for parents, besides reading to their kids and letting their kids play, was let them fail. You know, let them fail, let them experience the consequences, stop being a helicopter parent. And it was, I had to like literally teach parents to stand back. And I used to use the example, and I still do, of, you know, you think of those, the trapeze artists, and there's a safety net underneath. And I'd say to the parents, your kids are on the trapeze of life and you're safety net, and just keep moving the safety net lower and lower. So it's always there, but you know, as they get older and so on, you have to have it lower and lower, or for whatever different task and that kind of thing. But I'm so glad you brought that up, because it's something that has become, I watched over the 30 years that I practice, I watched that I had to teach it more and more. In the 2000s, I had to teach that more to my parents than in the 80s when I first started practicing. So it's very interesting. So I'm very glad that you brought that up.
Thank you very much. Yeah. And by the way, like I'm just a dad trying to figure it out.
You're doing a fantastic job.
Yeah. Well, we'll find out, I guess, in 20 years.
Well, your kids can always read your book.
Yeah, that's the goal ultimately.
You can say, don't listen to me, just read my book. That's what I tell my kids. You don't have to listen to me, just read my books.
Yeah, that's the way to put it. The most crystallized version of your thoughts. Hey, another high level thought on parenting is just this idea, this high level principle of underprogramming. Right now, kids are so programmed. They're so special. When I say program, that means after school every night they got something. They got swimming, they got violin, they got like soccer, whatever. Every night they got something. And then when our kids are rigidly programmed, what you've lost is boredom, which is the breeding ground for creativity, because creativity abhors a vacuum. So creativity fills a vacuum. You lose nature interaction. So that's why we see a spike in quote unquote NDD, or nature deficit disorder. You lose the idea of, like, whenever my kids say I'm bored, I say, oh, good. That's great. That means that you'll come up with, and then guess what? 10 minutes later, they've like set up the cushions across the floor and they're playing lava game or whatever, but they made it up because I want them to be bored. I want our family vacation not to be, and this is just me talking, it's not like Neil's whatever, but I'm like, I don't want our family vacation to be like a programmed itinerary of like the challenges through four cities. I want it to be all of us sitting in like a place where there's nothing to do. And that's a good breeding ground for daydreaming, intellectual expansion. We cannot measure the mind. Like, we don't have a good picture of what that looks like, but I just believe that your mind expands.
It does. It's infinite.
You know, and by the way, and the only thing, as you know, the only research has ever proven to work in terms of homework is reading.
Exactly.
You said reading. Yeah. It's the only homework ever proven to actually work. So if, by the way, the other thing I would say to your kids is don't do any homework.
Yeah.
It's reading below age like 12 or 15 or something like that. But they should, no homework is proven to do anything. We have our kids going to a school where there's no homework policy. And we love that. My wife's a teacher. We love that because we know no homework actually works. And if they have boredom at home, that's good. And if they don't, well, there's a pile of books in every room and we don't have TV.
Oh gosh, you're so on track. Honestly, I've trained thousands of teachers in the work that I do, and thousands of physicians. And I can tell you now that one of the things that I try and do in the schools, and I don't train in education that much anymore, but it would be to stop giving them homework, rather give them a book to read. You know, but it's an endless battle, especially with the current education system. But that's good. You can find it, and you can find a school that works with you like that. It's wonderful. And the fact that your wife's a teacher and she's got that, thank those children that are with her are very, 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 very lucky. So that's really great.
I feel that way. And by the way, I may as well just put a plug in for her. She wrote the teaching guide for You Are Awesome.
So if anyone listening
to this happens to want the version, like anyone listening to this as a teacher or a principal or administrator, and they want to teach the lessons on resilience from You Are Awesome, my book, into the classroom, that's just a free resource she's created for the book for schools.
Fantastic. So that's on your website, isn't it?
I think it's on my website. My website's just www.neil.com. Honestly, I'll just say you can just email my assistant and we'll send it to you. It's just Erin, E-R-I-N, at globalhappiness.org. Erin at globalhappiness.org. She will send you.
That's
she
wonderful.
She will send you the teaching guide if you
want
it.
Oh, that's fantastic. Thank you so much. That's really wonderful. We'll make sure we put that in the show notes as well.
Yeah, I can send it to you also. Actually,
I'd love that. Yeah, that'll be fantastic.
For your show notes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thank you. Fantastic. Okay, so this is really, really good. Is there anything else about kids that you want to say before we move on to the next question?
No, I like a podcast like a roller coaster ride, where my eyes are blindfolded. I like to not know what's going to happen next.
Okay, well, what's going to happen next is the millennials. I want to know about millennials. So in this book, you also share some advice, because in my clinical trials I've just finished, I had found some fascinating research with the millennials, and I was interested to hear what you've got to say, share some advice for millennials looking for a flashlight to help illuminate the dark path of adulthood.
Well, in a way, I think that the book itself does gear itself holistically towards millennials. We talked about, you love it so much you could take the pain and the punishment too. We haven't talked about, although I think you wanted to talk about, the three S's of success.
I do. I'd love to. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So
you can jump
into
that. There's no, whatever works.
Well, this kind of works for millennials. So basically, most people growing up these days, if they're of the high achieving variety, and I imagine they are if they're listening to your podcast, they're like, I want it all. I want to be rich. Mm-hmm. I want to have a job that is so totally soul satisfying and gives me my purpose. My chi is, my ikigai is satisfied. And I want to have an incredible lifestyle where I'm home all the time and I don't work in the evenings and I have tons of vacation and I get to travel the world. Okay. That's totally unrealistic. So what I then say to people is, well, what do you really want? And I draw them a triangle. I call this the success triangle.
Mm-hmm.
And why did I start doing this? Because people started emailing me and asking me questions saying, oh, Neil, how do I sell 1 million books? And I was like, well, is that what you want? They're like, no, I want to write down my grandmother's memoir. I'm like, well, that's not going to sell 1 million books. Or I'm like, well, what do you really want? They're like, well, I've always dreamt of having like my book covered in the New York Times book review. I was like, well, that's not going to sell 1 million books either. And then I realized, oh, there's three kinds of success. And it applies to life and it applies to projects. On the triangle, draw three points, like every triangle, and label them sales, social, and self. Sales is how much money you make. It's like literally commercial success. So a book like The Book of Awesome, my first book, it sold 1 million copies and it was great. Like the book I mentioned, Mark Manson's book, right? Mm-hmm. It sold a lot of copies. Now, my book, was it a social success? No, it actually has received zero positive reviews to this day. I've not been reviewed by anyone. I've not been in the New York Times book review. Nobody would consider my book literature or anything super fancy. So it was never covered or treated as a serious book by any sort of, it was never given this sort of like social proof. And self, how did I feel about it? Which is like my internal stuff. It didn't really solve my problems. Like I was still lonely. I was still coming out of my divorce. I was still, I still didn't have that many friends. So it wasn't like I thought it was going to solve this problem for me or fix this hole for me. And it really just frankly, to be honest with you, did not.
Mm.
Now, I think this model is really important because look at the movies. Oscar nominees just came out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you asked me which movie sold the most tickets last year, I could tell you. And if you said which movie's nominated for the Oscars, they're totally different movies.
Mm.
Even the Oscar nomination is the number one social proof of a movie's,
Very good example. Mm.
Right. And so the example I use in my book, and this is actually from The Happiest Equation, my book before, is Fast and the Furious 7 grossed $700 million, but Moonlight won Best Picture and it grossed $18 million.
Mm.
Which would you rather have made? Ask yourself that question. Same with music that you make. Same with art that you're making. Same with your life. Do you really want to make a lot of money? If so, go be an investment banker. But they work 100 hours a week. Go work for McKinsey. But they work 100 hours a week. Go do something that for sure makes lots of money. But they work 100 hours a week. If you want to have an incredible lifestyle, great, choose that. If you ask my wife why she's a teacher, she talks and waxes poetically about how she feels that she can make a difference in children's lives. She also says really openly, I wanted to be a mom who had the summers off. And yes, I could have been the prime minister or the president or, an emergency room doctor.
Mm-hmm.
But I was really conscious of the fact that I want a lifestyle that allowed me to be present as a mom in the summers.
Mm.
So she chose that. And by the way, teachers don't make that much money. So you see what I'm saying? Like she took the sacrifice on salary because she's like, I just want that lifestyle. I'm just saying, be conscious of what you want. Hey, millennials, if you're listening to this, pick one. You can't have both. And you certainly can't have both right away. And then go for that. But be conscious and open and honest with yourself about which one you're chasing. There's three kinds of success: sales, social, and self. And everything can fit into that paradigm.
By now, I'm sure you've heard of the dangers of artificial light. especially artificial blue light from our devices like phones and TVs. If you aren't familiar with what artificial blue light is and how it can negatively impact your mental and physical health, then I highly recommend you listen to my podcast, episode 114. Do you find you get those terrible headaches at night or after a long day of work at a computer? I used to get this all the time until I started using Blue Blocks glasses. The one company I trust to make the highest quality and scientifically backed blue light blocking glasses. Blue Blocks has a variety of lens options, so you can get a pair that suits to your most pressing needs, such as their Summer Glow lens, which is designed for daytime use, for those who work under intense artificial lighting and suffer from migraines, anxiety, depression, or seasonal affective disorder. Many customers have reported that these glasses have really helped improve their mood. Get 15% off your order today when you use the code DRLEAF at checkout. Just go to blueblocks.com and use the code DRLEAF at checkout. The link and details will be in the show notes. I love it. I love that, Neil, because it's just, if I look at the results of my clinical trials, our millennials had biological ages that were sometimes 40 years older than what their actual chronological age was, and that their brain, because I use neurophysiological techniques, so brain stuff, so brain technology, and we saw like the brain waves were like insanely, that their anxiety levels were just crazy. And then once we taught them mind management, which I did through my app called Switch, I've got this app called Switch, which we put in the clinical trials. And it's just basically teaching basic mind management skills in a brain science stuff that I've been working on for years. It's a technique I've developed years ago. Once they had the mind management in place, their management of their brainwaves changed, the blood work changed, everything about them changed. And this three S's that as you're talking, I'm thinking, wow, this is just fantastic. This is a fantastic technique that is practical and simple to help someone, anyone, not as you say, these three S's are for everyone. It's just a very simple way of getting people to actually self-regulate more about what do they really want out of life, instead of just thinking I have to get controlled by the happiness industry, or I've got to look like this, or the self-help industries. There's been so much confusion around the motivation, self-help, happiness industry, I think, in confusing people understanding those three S's. So that's really a great tool. On that note, what do you think of the happiness industry? And you wrote a book on the happiness equations, but you approach it very differently.
Yeah, I mean, the industry is too big. If you go on Amazon, there's like 100,000 books with the words happiness in the title. If you go on Google and you type in how to be, the first drop down is happy. Mm-hmm. And then number two is rich, and then pretty, and then real estate agent.
That's so interesting.
If you look at Professor David Meyer's work at the University of Michigan, he has shown that for generations, our measures of abundance have increased, our wealth, our lifespan, our education, but our happiness levels have stayed flat. Mm-hmm. So the way I approach the industry is I think that the underpinning of most of our models on happiness is backwards. And so I think that our parents lied to us, and they told us that great work led to big success, led to being happy. Mm-hmm. Study really hard, get good grades, and you become a doctor, or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Actually, I think it's the opposite. You have to be happy first in order to do great work, and then you have the big success after, both in terms of motivability, but also, you live longer. Your longevity is up if you're happy. You know this from the University of Kentucky. So then I think the whole happiness industry is depending on, I don't want to blanket the industry because there's lots of great players out there, but
yeah, I agree.
If anyone says you're on the way to happiness, do this, like that's not going to make sense. It doesn't make sense to me. What it is no, you have to be happy first, and then the great work and the big success follows. How do you be happy first? Well, that's the thing. We actually know it's not that secret. It's simple studies. Like if you give me 20 minutes of your day every day, I will say, go for a walk in nature, or read 20 pages of fiction, or write a gratitude diary about the things you're grateful for, or meditate, or sing in a choir. Like these are not
you don't need brain science to actually understand that. It's just logical stuff.
Very, very simple stuff. And so when I give my keynote speeches, I'm always talking about how simple these things are. And I say part of the reason we're scared of them is because they're so simple.
Oh, I love it.
Part of the reason you don't want to journal every night about the gratitude is because it feels cheesy and it doesn't feel like it would really work, but it really does work. Same with fiction. I always say, and I speak mostly to business audiences, so you know this is like corporate speak. They either don't read enough because no one reads enough because no one thinks they have time, or they only read nonfiction. That's the other thing. They only read nonfiction. By the way, I only write nonfiction, same as you, but it's like, you know, fiction is actually what's proven to open up your mirror neurons.
Exactly.
And make you more compassionate, more empathetic, more understanding. It is what's been shown in MRI studies from Emory University to increase all kinds of activity in all kinds of areas of the brain that other forms of art or media simply do not open.
Totally correct.
You watch Netflix, someone's the director. They come up with the character, the screenplay, the script, the costumes, the set design, whatever. You just passively consume it like a cow eating slop. If you read a book, you're the director. You come up with the characters, what they look like, what they sound like, what they're wearing, what the set looks like. You're using way more of your brain. There's a old quote from Game of Thrones. It says, a reader lives 1,000 lives before he dies. Mm-hmm. The man who never reads lives only one.
Mm-hmm. That's so good. You're speaking my language. All the brain research that I've done as well. It's just totally my main thing in therapy, as I said to you, my first prescription on the prescription pad was read, 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 and read a book and close your eyes and read, let the kids listen in a classroom. I would have to teach schools to actually read to their kids. I couldn't believe that I came to this country and there weren't libraries in the schools. You know, there's things, so yeah, you've got things very back to front. So yeah, I agree with you.
So just a quick thing on my podcast, like it's called Three Books because I want to read more and I'm looking for the 1,000 most formative books in the world. So I'm trying to find 333 people. And each person asks which three books change your life. And the reason I do that, by the way, Dr. Leaf, is because there's no other way to find them, meaning that I don't trust the piles in the bookstore because I know that they're all paid for.
Exactly.
You know, so they're all, you know, and I'm part of that game too because I have new books that come out and they get paid for on the front of the bookstore.
Exactly.
Right? But I also know that's like, wait, everything at the front of the bookstore is paid to be there, just like every soup at the front of the end cap in the grocery store. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, but the problem is, unlike soup, you have 50 kinds of soup in the aisle, but with books, you have 200 million.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a million new books printed in English every year.
Mm-hmm.
So your chances of finding a good one are bad. And when I interview people and I talk to people about why they don't read, they think, oh, I'm not, they say to me, I'm not a good reader. I don't really like books. You know, and I ask them why? They're kind of too boring. They don't hold my attention. No, that's not your fault. That's the book sucks.
Exactly.
And you can't find the book that you like because there's a million new ones that come out every year, which means that there's 5,000 new books a day or something like that. It's way too much. So looking into a bookstore or really Amazon, it's like you're looking into a never-ending sea of books that will never – so the reason I'm doing this podcast is because the only way I can figure out what I should actually be reading is to sit down with Judy Blume and ask her which three books changed your life, or sit down with Malcolm Gladwell and ask him, or David Sedaris. That's why I'm doing it.
I love it.
The pressure it puts on me is that it makes me read those books before. And not to go in another little rant because you got me going now, is all
rant.
These books I read are, and you mentioned this yourself, and I think we're on the same page, is they're real books, like actual paper books, because there's research that shows that if you read on a device where you can do anything else, you will.
Exactly. You're speaking my language. You know, I tell you, one of the things in my world that I work in is that the world of mental health, they never consider – let me say it this way. Reading a book and building your brain through reading a book is actually one of the most successful and efficient ways of improving your mental health. And that's not spoken about. Everyone just gives you, you know, label, diagnosis, drug. And I mean, I fight against that industry, but reading is just completely overlooked and to build your brain. So as you're reading the story or even reading the fiction and the nonfiction, and I agree with you, it's got to be both. You're doing incredible things in your brain. You're doing incredible things in your body and you are improving your mental health because it feeds back into your mind. So it's like the number one. If someone has got anxiety and depression, I'll tell them, read. That'll be like the first thing is read and build your brain, and then the other things. You know,
how do you deal with or manage or react to the fact that most people don't? like a third of Americans read zero books last year. The average reader reads 2 to 3 books a year. So we're speaking the same language, but let's be honest, 90% of people or more just simply aren't readers or wouldn't label themselves as people that read normal. So then what do you – like what's – I'm trying to do it with my podcast. Like, what's the pathway to becoming a reader?
Does anyone else find bras very uncomfortable? I have always struggled to find one that fits me perfectly, and I hate those annoying tags that scratch my skin. And this is why I am so thankful I found Third Love. Third Love is probably the most comfortable bra I've ever owned and one that fits perfectly. Third Love uses the measurements of millions of women to design bras with all-day comfort and support. Bras come in over 80 sizes, including half cups, and are made with signature memory foam cups, no slip straps, and smooth, scratch-free band with a table's label, so no annoying itching. Every customer has 60 days to wear it, wash it, and put it to the test. And if you don't love it, return it, and Third Love will wash it and donate it to a woman in need. So far, Third Love has donated over 15 million in bras. Third Love knows there's a perfect bra for everyone, so right now they are offering my listeners 15% off your first order. Go to thirdlove.com/drleaf now to find your perfect fitting bra and get 15% off your first purchase. That's thirdlove.com/drleaf for 15% off today. The link and offer details will also be in the show notes. That's such a good question because I dealt with that all the time and I still deal with that. So I always, you know, once people understand what it can do for your mental health and your brain and you start giving people reasons, they're a little bit more open. And then there's things like I used to get my patients that wouldn't read and my adults, all ages, to read things, start with things like asterisks and obliques. I mean, I don't know if you've ever read an asterisk or obliques, but they're absolutely, that's required reading in anyone's life, in my opinion. And as, you know, that gets you going because it really makes you think and it creates a love because you've got that, you know, it's a step into the reading world. And that's how I would get my patients and my kids grew up in libraries. It would take your child to a library. I would be having carry newborn babies into the library and get books. And so my kids grew up around libraries. So they always have books. They never walk around without a book in their bag, you know, so it's a lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And it's, you kind of got to teach. I've had to teach people and teach, and but it's a knowledge, it's an education. So you're doing such, that's why I love your podcast, because you're doing such a great service to community just to get their mental, you're helping people with mental health through pushing people to read. So that's great.
I got another one for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote an article in 2017 for Harvard Business Review called 8 Ways to Read a Lot More Books This Year.
Mm.
And it was a category of all the things I thought could really help people read more. And just because I didn't used to read much myself. That's the thing. I wasn't always a reader. I became one through these things. Anyway, one of the biggest things for me is delete the news. Like literally don't read the news, period.
That'll give you time. Oh. Brilliant.
Yeah, exactly. And most people subscribe to like newspapers or magazines. It's like if you cancel all that and you channel all that reading power and time in the books, at the end of the year, instead of having a pile of old newspapers, you've got a bookshelf of books you've read. So you're not out of it because like I don't read the news at all. But I still know about the coronavirus because how can you not? There's TVs up in every library.
Exactly. And you can listen to a podcast while you're working out and you can get the daily, New York Daily, and you've got it like in 5 minutes. You've got the whole. Yeah.
Yeah. Or just look at Wikipedia.
Mm-hmm, see, exactly.
Wikipedia is a great objective source of news with no ads. So anyway.
No, that's brilliant. I love it. Okay. So another thing that you bring up that's such an interesting point in the book and one that I completely agree with. In fact, I wrote a whole chapter on multitasking is a myth in a book that one of the books I've written. So, and you also say the same thing. Talk about why multitasking is a myth because we're on the same page with that too.
Sure. First of all, multitasking is a word invented by IBM.
Oh, I love that.
In the 1960s, when they wrote a white paper about how it was the ability of a microprocessor to appear to simultaneously process two tasks at one time by alternating which microprocessor did work. So first of all, you have to have more than one microprocessor, and then it appears to look like you're doing two things at once. Thing is, a microprocessor is the human equivalent of a brain, and you do not have two brains.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a word invented by a computer company like 50 years ago. This is not a thing that we can do. If you had two brains, you can multitask, but you can't. So what we're doing today is we are – and people are like, oh, that's not true. I can brush my teeth while changing my socks. It's like, no, you can't. You are taking tiny breaks from brushing your teeth to change your socks. You're taking tiny breaks from changing your socks to brush your teeth.
Mm-hmm. So well said.
Right. And if you're texting while driving, you're actually not texting while driving and you shouldn't and it's illegal, blah, blah, blah. But you're actually taking a break from driving to text and you're taking a break from texting to drive. Your brain is not doing two things at one time. It's alternating the things it does. You think you're doing two things, but you're just alternating. You're taking gaps. So obviously, the recommendation is don't multitask. You can't. And in my book, you are awesome. I recommend people take an untouchable day. And I do one of these days once a week.
I heard you talk about that. And I think it's fantastic.
So no, like I did one on Monday of this week. It was my best day of this week. On Monday of this week, I left my cell phone at home for the day, like no cell phone all day. And I put a piece of tape. It's funny. It's still on my computer, not over my camera on my laptop, but I put a piece of tape over where the internet's connected. So I unconnect it. Then I put a piece of tape over it so I can't see it. So if I put my kerchief there, it's like there's a piece of tape over it. So I'm like reminded not to go on the internet. And guess what, Dr. Leaf? I wrote 3,748 words that day.
Oh my gosh, fantastic.
Right, and those are 3,748 words that might be crappy, but they're towards a book that has like a 60,000 word count on it.
Well, they're working towards something.
Exactly, and by the way, just do the math. Like, I could technically have 20 days and write a whole book. Like, now, is it going to be good? I haven't edited it yet. But my point is, on a normal day, if I was saying I'm going to write today, I'd probably write 500 words.
With a million interruptions, and with every interruption you lose your whole focus and you have to come back again. And
exactly.
No, I heard you say that on the Jordan Harbinger show, and I just thought that is such a good thing, because I do that. I didn't even call it that day, but I'm going to do your untouchable days. I'll text all my team and I'll say, I'm not answering texts for the next 5 hours or emails. If you send me anything, unless someone's dying, don't contact me. And, you know, that's when you really get some decent work done. And sometimes I'll work through the night and sleep later in the morning, because then no one can get hold of me.
Exactly. You're right. You know, this is interesting. People already do it without realizing they're doing it, because they're just cranking on a Saturday afternoon when there's no interruptions naturally.
Exactly. But you're actually making it a dedicated choice. You're making it a choice to fit that into your calendar. And I love that, you know, with the multitasking thing, I'm sure you're familiar with that research where they actually ask people who think they can multitask well. You know, they did a whole questionnaire, and the ones that said, oh, I do it so well, I'm so good at it, their IQ, not that IQs, it's just a measurement in a moment of time. It's got no indication with potential. So I just want to qualify that up front. But you could see a distinct drop in their IQ would go down when they were multitasking and go up when they stopped. You know, so it's just interesting that and the ones that thought that they were multitasking and were successful at it had the lowest drops in their IQ.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the thing with multitasking, why it's quite scary, because people actually think that they are functioning at a higher level, but they're not. You know, and you actually can't. You're just making a total mess of the whole thing. And so I love that you're addressing that, because it's not addressed enough. And people also get all panicky and think, oh, well, I'm brushing my teeth and doing my shoes, and you explained that so well. It's little breaks that are happening in between. But you've got to realize, on a conscious level, we do have little breaks in between. On an unconscious level, it's a whole different story. But on a conscious level, the way you explained it, little breaks in between, is very, very good way of explaining it.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I love this. Listen, I could have a conversation with you that would kind of go on for hours. And so we'll have to do another podcast sometime. I'd love to have you back. But I'm respectful of your time. So if you can let's just end off by you telling people where they can find out more about you, your book, your podcast, and your work. And obviously, we'll put that all in our show notes.
Sure. My podcast is called 3 Books, the number 3 in the word books, and everything about me, my books, my videos, everything, which is mostly free actually, is just www.neil.blog. So just www.neil.blog for everything.
Fantastic. And do you have a word of wisdom just to end off the podcast?
Do you love it so much you can take the pain and the punishment too?
I love that. I love
it. And you can hear my kids have just arrived home from school, so this is a perfect
time
for me to go
perfect
into
exit
the
point.
Chaos.
Into the chaos. Enjoy it. Neil, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and thanks for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. I hope you found today's podcast interesting and helpful. If you want more tips and help with managing anxiety, depression, and mental health, be sure to visit my website at drleaf.com. And to sign up for my weekly newsletter, where I also include a schedule of my speaking events and so much more. And follow me on social media. I'm on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Just look for Dr. Caroline Leaf. Also, I love seeing all your posts on social media about this podcast. I love seeing what resonates with you and what you've learned. So be sure to continue posting and tagging me and letting me know what you think and how these tips worked out for you. And don't forget, leave a review and keep spreading the word about this podcast. Thank you for joining me today. I really hope you learned something new and helpful. Till then, I'm Dr. Caroline Leaf. This podcast represents the opinions of myself and my guests. The content here should not be taken as medical advice. The content here is for educational and informational purposes only. Please consult your healthcare professional for any individual medical questions you may have. While we make every effort to ensure that the information we are sharing is accurate, we welcome any comments, suggestions, or corrections of errors.